Welcome back to Extra Features Interview. Today we have somebody that's crazy enough to come back a third time. Roberta Tanto is here with Not a Still Life. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you.
So how have you been?
I've been well.
I guess coming back a third time, you're enjoying this? You're getting good responses to them?
I do enjoy the interaction, and I'm not sure I know exactly how to evaluate the responses, but I like posting that there's an interview for people to pay attention to.
So before we get into your film, I mean, coming back three times, I think I'm getting a definite feel as you as a filmmaker.
Okay.
And I want to know why you became a filmmaker, because I can't extrapolate that from anything you've given me, other than you were interested in stories.
My background before film was theater. I was interested in theater. I was going to, you know, my idea was that I'd somehow be involved in theater as an actor. And I also had for a very long time a passionate desire to study mime, which I did do. I went to Paris and stayed there for a year and studied with mime. It was fulfilling a dream, really. But I came back from that experience realizing that I wasn't going to have a life that way in theater. So, you know, I just put together my awareness of other things I'd been attracted to, and film was one of them, so I applied to film school, and that next thing I knew, I was making films.
So this is your third film?
Oh, no, this is not my third film. I've made many more than three.
Okay, so you've only sent me three, which is fine, doesn't matter. So let's discuss, I really want to get into why Steve. I think we do have to start there because he's the whole film.
Right. Steve is the main character of the film. And I found him both very intriguing and very annoying. So it was that contradiction that interested me because he could be very funny, very entertaining, had a lot of self-awareness in many ways, and all sorts of blind spots in other ways. That was how I perceived him. So actually, when I started to make the film, I thought it would be an easy film to make. I thought it would include the various stories he had shared with me, and I kind of whip it together in a short amount of time. Didn't work out that way. Turned out to be much more complex because he's complex. But I also liked what was available to me in terms of the possible imagery, his location, his pool, his activities, etc.
So, you brought me a few things. I guess I'm going to have to ask first, how long did this take to film then?
Good question. I filmed it. First of all, he lived in one city, I lived in another. He was living in Los Angeles at the time, I was living in San Diego. So every time I wanted to shoot with him, it was a two-hour drive up to Los Angeles. And I would usually stay the weekend, shoot the 2 days that I had and come back. And then there were things that had to be reshot, and there were problems that, you know, some problems with the audio. So it ended up being a lot of extra trips back and forth between San Diego and Los Angeles. Over, you know, I started in 2009, and I think I was done shooting in 2012.
Oh, wow.
But bear in mind, I mean, that's not the only thing I was doing, and it was more of a challenge than I had anticipated. I was also starting work on another film at the same time.
How is Steve responsive to you asking him to do it? Because I think that's a big step for him to do it. Or maybe he wanted to do it. I have no idea.
He likes the attention.
Okay.
But he But at times it was frustrating for him. Trying to think what the reasons are. Well, you know, whenever we had to reshoot something, that was frustrating because, you know, we're trying to recapture the feeling or whatever that we captured the first time, but now it's the second time, and it could be very demanding. But basically, I think he loved it. I mean, I think he liked that a film was being made about him, and he says repeatedly that he likes the questions that I asked him, that he thought they were probing, and he reports that friends of his who've seen the film found them interesting.
I guess I would say Steve does like to be filmed. I would agree with you, because, I mean, the first shot really I got a sense of Steve is him sitting naked in the pool continuously.
That's not the first shot of the film.
No, but I mean, I guess the first shot when I felt I got to know him. The first shot of the film is a wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't feel really I know Steve. I said when I started feeling comfortable with him was when he was comfortable with the camera swimming naked. I'm like, okay, you're good. I got it.
Well, yeah, he has some exhibitionist tendencies on the one hand, but on the other hand, it's important to say, because there are people who complain that maybe a little too much swimming in the pool naked. But there's something about that for me that isn't about exhibitionism or hedonism or any other complaints that some people have voiced. This is where he is at peace. This is where he can, you know, kind of collect himself and pull himself together and deal with all of his struggles. It's like a meditation for him.
But he clearly says that in the pool, that this works for me.
Yeah.
And he really likes it. And I mean, I did get that. I did make notes about his sculpture of a giant penis he seems very excited about.
You know, there was a certain iconography that was popular, I think, at a certain time in gay cultural history. And that tiki doll was one of them.
I found that most of his, even he states that most of his eclectic taste comes from his old partner.
Correct.
And well, I found that interesting. They didn't have his own sense of style, I didn't find.
He admits that that is the case, and that's part of why losing his partner was so devastating, is that his partner had provided a life and a lifestyle that he did not know, had never known, and now he's now that the lover is gone, he's faced with holding on to everything that was left behind as a way to preserve that relationship or the memory.
And Steve says something very interesting, I thought, at one point. He could not live with the meat eater. And I thought that was weird because he seems very pro-vegetarian, but he accepts them too. And I thought that was strange because I didn't expect him to say that.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what to say about that. I'm not Steve, but he's really, at that point in the film, he's asking himself. You know, he says he accepts that his friends are meat eaters, and he doesn't expect everybody to live the way he lives, but he's questioning whether or not he could live with a meat eater. Because, after all, I mean, when you're living with someone, it's like, you know, it's like having meat in your house. And if you're opposed to the whole idea, I can see where that could be a problem.
So did you find when you were probing Steve with questions, you would get answers you thought were not what you expected?
Sometimes. I mean, sometimes he could turn a question into something that would end up being very funny. I have to give him credit for that. He could be very funny at times. And would kind of twist a question in a certain way that would produce a surprising answer. But, you know, I think he tried to be honest. I think that there are certain, let me say it like this. Well, maybe I already did. I think there are certain ways that he knows himself very well and other ways that are not as obvious to him.
Now, was he okay? I guess knowing Steve, I think I know him somewhat, but after watching a film about him, he seemed okay with you interviewing his neighbors.
Well, I had to ask first if he was okay with that, and he was, and they were, so.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating, him entering his neighbors. I really did enjoy that part of the film. I thought that added a whole new aspect to the film that I wanted.
Tell me why. I'm curious.
I'd say I knew you were going to. It gave me more depth to Steve, because, I mean, I'm only getting one perspective. I'm getting you and Steve's perspective about Steve.
Right.
And interviewing the neighbors allowed me to understand him a bit more, so they like him.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure if he would be abrasive to them or not. Because, I mean, I could see as a viewer finding Steve abrasive at times.
Okay.
And I accept that because he thinks very highly of himself.
Okay. You know, all these things are true. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to bring the neighbors in, because actually of the two or three that I interviewed, they all, each have a different take on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a different experience of him. And one gay man who saw that part, he didn't see the whole film. But when one of the neighbors refers to Steve as provocative, his interpretation, this person who saw the film, his interpretation of the word provocative was that it was code for something undesirable, such as gay. And in fact, I never had that feeling. I thought that he was speaking directly to the ways that Steve is provocative. He enjoys being provocative.
I do have to ask, before we get too far, before I forget, do you still talk to Steve?
Yes.
Okay. I think that's a fair question to ask.
Did you think he would stop speaking to me after the film?
Well, I didn't know, because, I mean, you do have at the end of the film, you do talk a bit, which I will get to later. I just wanted to know if Steve was alive, I guess, is what I was going to say.
Yeah, well, very much so.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I did like how he discussed his dating life still. I thought that was fascinating, that he still peruses online, and I love how he met his partner, and I quite enjoyed him really getting into that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wasn't really sure where he was going.
Yeah. There are certain moments that are very heartfelt when he's speaking about his lover and how much he misses him and how difficult it has been for him to live without him.
Now, I guess this may be a weird question the film didn't answer. Does Steve have a lot of friends?
Thank you for asking that. This is really interesting. In the beginning of the film, I introduce him, my voiceover introduces him when he's on that, I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's some kind of device that you lie on in order to exercise your back in a certain way. So the images of him doing that, over those images, I refer to the fact that he has more friends than I could ever hope to have. And that he gets more invitations than I could ever hope to have. And so the answer to your question is yes. There are a lot of people in his life and people take to him. He's very outgoing and he makes friends with anybody, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember one day we had to go to Radio Shack to buy something. And, you know, he's making conversation with the salesperson, and it ends up being very funny. And sometimes it's a little bit, I don't know if I can think of the word I want, but surprising, you know. And he engages people in a way that a lot of people don't know how to do.
I guess this may be a strange question. Maybe you did show it in the film. What was the most interesting thing you learned about him you didn't know?
Gosh, that's a hard question.
I mean, I thought it was fascinating he made his own food. I thought that was very interesting. I thought it was fascinating that he's taken to the internet and he's still looking for somebody and he's still very active.
Right.
Those are fascinating things I learned about him. And I am going to get to the second half of the film, I call it, but we'll get there.
Okay. Well, you know, for the audience that's listening, we haven't said anything about Steve in terms of who he is. I mean, he is an aging Jewish man, and aging, by which I mean, you know, at the time of the film, he was in his mid-60s, I believe. So in addition to everything else he's dealing with aging. You know, the realization that he's not, even though he's still very active, you know, that he's not the young, beautiful boy that he once was.
Well, he states that numerous times.
Mm-hmm. Like and it obviously bothers him.
Yeah, his hair loss definitely bothers him. He discusses that numerous times.
So, you've divided the film in half. Can you tell me
why or where?
No, wasn't going to ask why. I was going to say, what did you get out of the first part of the film?
I thought you presented the film lovely. I got to know him first, which I really liked. And I kind of was going, are you going with this film? I said, you can't just dwell on this part of his life. I got to see what's next.
And did you get to see what's next?
Of course I did. And we'll get there. We can go there now. When he got the letter from his cousin, I think it was, that he hadn't heard from before and wanted him to rejoin the church pretty much.
I wouldn't call it a church.
A synagogue. Okay. Synagogue.
Yeah. Okay. So the cousin was older than Steve and didn't approve of his lifestyle so much, but what kind of encouraged him to find his way back to the synagogue. Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating that Steve said, okay, I'm going to do this. And I don't know if a lot of people would have done that.
Yeah. Well, his experiences were very authentic. He was moved, I think, a lot by this reconnection with Jewish history and his, you know, the story of his own family. And that had a lot of meaning to him.
I have to agree with you. I really think it gave him a new purpose.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Because at the beginning of the film, I would say he was stagnant, and I think Steve would argue he was stagnant. He was looking for something there.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we can go through the furniture business, but that wasn't giving it to him. I think he was having issues, and he says, I really don't know what I'm doing. I have great people that work for me. And, you know, some months are good, some months are bad. I get that. He's a small business. I got that. But I think the synagogue and him embracing his cousin and going to learn all this stuff was – a revelation to him. It gave him a new meaning.
It did. And then, don't forget, he gets to the point where he makes the decision to study to have an adult bar mitzvah, since he never had that as a young boy. And to me, that is one of the most moving parts of the film.
Absolutely.
He's going through it, and you see him weeping because it's so meaningful.
I gotta say, like, I think he was so excited that they were embracing him finally, because I made a note that his mother didn't help him. Like, I really felt his family didn't help him much. And he was sort of isolated from them.
Well, I mean, in some of my promotional materials, I make the point. Here he was, a young guy growing up in the 50s where, you know, it was not approved of or accepted in any way. His parents had a lot of difficulty with him as a overactive kid, but also with his inclinations. So he didn't receive any support. And he came out very early. I mean, when you think about it, he came out to his family and to everyone long before the Stonewall can't think of the word, not revolution. But He was willing to own his homosexuality at a very early stage of the gay movement.
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, also one of the things that makes him interesting.
And I also would like to give you full credit. It was a new state that only some Jewish synagogues accept gay people and
right.
trans people. I really like that about you, that you told me that, because I wouldn't have known.
Yeah,
and
well,
I thought that was interesting to me.
Relatively new, you know. I mean, as the culture changes, institutions are changing slowly, not all. But it's the reform movement that he's a part of, which is not as rigid or conservative as others.
But I think that's great, because he obviously was looking for something, and he could join it. And I thought that was great that he had a bar mitzvah and he's really into his synagogue. I thought that was fabulous of him.
Well, he found a place of belonging. And that, I think, is in a large part what the film is about, really, is, there are multiple ways of identifying him, but he was basically looking for acceptance and a home in some form, some kind of community, and he finds it.
Yeah, which I don't think he had in L.A. I never got that premise he had a sense in L.A., because even discussed, I should have sold the house, maybe I shouldn't sell the house, I don't know, I have so many memories here.
He's very conflicted, and that was also interesting to me. I mean, he admits that he wasn't the greatest businessman in the world, and that maybe he made some mistakes. It was a very lonely road for him taking on the business. We didn't say that it was left to him by his partner. And he had to learn everything from the ground up. But that doesn't mean that he did everything well. I mean, it was a strain. And I think that the synagogue gave him a place of some form of peace.
I want to focus on the business for a couple seconds here. When you went to film The Business, how did you feel about it?
I'm not sure I know exactly.
It looks very small, and did you feel he knew what he was doing, or you just sort of filmed whatever you saw? Because you don't really ask him a lot of questions. He more just talks to you.
It didn't strike me as small, first of all. I mean, it's not a huge operation, but he does refer to having, I think at one time, 20 employees.
Yeah.
Yes, for now. But there was a lot happening at one time. Different workers working on different stages of the furniture business. His workers seemed very accommodating. They seemed to like him. And it was a little bit, I don't want to say it was staged, but once you bring a camera in, I mean, everybody's going to behave a little differently than they ordinarily would.
So how did you feel about bringing a camera into that environment? Were you looking for their stories? Because you only don't really interview them. You're more, one person, I think, gets an interview. And it's mainly Steve.
Yeah, no, it was mostly a way to situate him in relation to this part of his life. And really, when he talks about the business more than anything, I mean, he does rave about the quality of the work that's done there.
Oh, he does.
But the rest of the time, he's talking about the difficulties of running a business, which I think, through the years, had been overwhelming. You know, and also the mistakes that he made, which
now,
he was still paying the price for.
We do meet Steve's sister.
Yeah.
But we don't meet anybody else.
You meet that cousin.
Okay. I guess I'm referring to his mother and father.
No, because they're gone.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
He makes a reference to them. He makes a reference to his parents as being in show business. And his surprise that they were as rigid as they were and how they dealt with his upbringing, given that they lived outside of the norm, show business being a little looser, let's say, that world, than you know, suburban Florida, which is where I grew up.
So do you wish, I guess I'm asking, why didn't we have a longer interview with the sister? Because I wanted to build a little bit more.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. I mean, first of all, she didn't live in the same city. I never met her until after the film was made.
Okay, that's what I was looking for. Okay, that's what I'm looking for. Perfect. That's the answer I wanted.
Yeah. So the material that you see of her is from material that he provided that took place during the time of the bar mitzvah.
Uh-huh. Okay, I was a little confused there. I'm like, okay. Well, you edited it perfectly, because you're doing a documentary, so I don't really know where the footage is coming from. So I'm like, you're going to film it. Okay.
Yeah, but it's...
So your music's very tranquil, and I thought that really worked well. But I find that in a lot of your films, your music... I mean, except for the accordion, I find this film is very tranquil. You're definitely just using it as background. It's not overtaking the film ever.
Uh-huh.
Was that planned?
I thought the music suited the film, but there were some people who thought it was too slow or too dry or too, I think they used the word laconic.
Wow, big word.
Yeah, big word. But, you know, you can't listen to everybody. It worked for me.
It worked for me.
And he liked it.
I think they have to understand that the film is about Steve. The music should be a background. Steve's what we're focusing on here. We're here to meet Steve, not the music. And I think people need to realize that. I mean, Steve, this is his own personality. I think you would honestly say he creates his own music. Through his ability to speak, his ability to do this, his ability to do that. He loves his dog. That's clearly evident. Mm-hmm. He enjoys that dog. He enjoys walking with his dog. I wanted a little bit more of his neighborhood. Was that shot and not shown, or just you didn't think that was needed?
Well, I did show him walking through his neighborhood with the dog when he was talking about his, you know, did he sell the house or not sell the house, and what were all the conflicts. So I think you get a sense of where he lives.
Yeah, I get the number.
I could say where he lived.
Yeah, I was just wondering what community, because I mean, sometimes people, you know, gay people and whatever people join in a certain neighborhood, I guess is what I was trying to get at.
Well, you know what? It was the Hollywood Hills. A lot of people, if they know L.A., would know that pretty much from looking at just the backyard of his house.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
That's fine. Did anybody that you wanted to interview for the film you couldn't get?
That's a good question. Let me think. No, you know, when I decided to include the neighbors, that was, I was already working on the editing, and I came to the conclusion that I needed to add that to give another dimension to him and to other people's perception of him. But there was nothing else that I thought I wanted to do that I wasn't able to do, but your question makes me wonder if there was something that you wished that I had included.
I would have to look at the footage. I can't answer that question. It was just, I'm interested in, like, I guess what I'm looking for, maybe more cousins or something that knows Steve, maybe another story. I don't know. I enjoyed the film as a whole. I'm just like going, is there more I missed? But I do think her epilogue, which I do want to touch on, because I thought, I had questions why I wrote down the film, but you answered them in the epilogue.
Okay.
That Steve lost his house, because that was a question for me.
He had to move out of his factory to a smaller space.
Yes, which you stayed.
And he was not able to keep his home.
Right, which I think is very important to the viewer. Because we need to know those answers, because he brings them up. Because I'm like, because I was going to ask you, is the business still in business? Did he keep his house? Because, I mean, I make the notes as I watch it.
Yeah.
And I was interested in that. So I guess my question is, when your film was completed And you put that epilogue out. Did you, was that a last minute thing, or is it that you knew it was always going to be in there?
Let me answer you by saying that there were some comments from his friends who wished that I had put more emphasis on how he continued, you know, against all odds, and he's still in business, and there is a, the story does continue. Well, yeah, you know, you could go on forever, you know, just never stop shooting and, you know, end up with a 3-hour film. But that wasn't the right thing to do. It needed to have an ending. And I thought that was an appropriate ending, even though we've now spoiled it for anybody who hasn't seen it.
But it's a documentary. You need to watch it. I'm not really spoiling anything. I mean, I think you've got to watch it to know him.
That's true. So the ending that I chose was that as we see him in the end swimming in his pool yet again, he's still has the hope that something will come through for him. Maybe he'll win the lottery.
He talks about that.
He compares himself to Job, who lost everything but got it all back.
He does. I will give you that. I have a question. When you go out to film Steve or anything, is it just you or do you have a crew?
I was using a not very high format HDV camera. It was perfectly manageable for me alone. And I did not have a crew. There might be occasions when I need help for some reason, a complication that makes the shooting more or less manageable. But for the most part, it's just me.
And I guess when you are working on a film, do you ever know, like with any of your films, do you know what you're going to do with them in the end? Or you're just like, I need to make this film. I'm finished. What are your plans to do with them?
Well, for each film, it's obviously different. And in the case of this film, I had certain expectations that a lot of people would be interested in a character portrait, a character study of a gay man. But then once the film was finished, I also started to explore other ways to market the film, including the educational market. And let's see, am I answering the question?
I think you are.
Okay.
I'm happy with that answer. Because you're a filmmaker. I mean, you do documentaries. So things just sort of, you see somebody, just for the sake of my argument, you meet Steve. You're like, hey, I want to make a film about this person. I like him.
Right. Well, you can imagine how much he liked that idea.
Oh, I could. But I guess what I'm saying is a lot of people write a script. This is what I'm going to do. This is where I'm going to go. But with a documentarian as yourself, that's a whole different world. You're filming something, I find you have passion in all your projects.
Thank you. I think that's true.
And it comes through, I think, in your film. And I couldn't see you doing a documentary film on something you didn't want to do. Whether it was going to make money or not, not aside.
Yeah.
You have to want it for it to work.
That's true. That's true. And you know, one of the comments actually on Amazon was a reference to the film as a loving portrait.
Absolutely. I would totally back that up.
Yeah. So I thought that the scenery, the situation between the house and the pool and the backyard and all his activities just lent themselves so well to a visual story.
Yes, absolutely. He's fascinating. Like, I do find him fascinating individual.
Well, I'm glad you concur with me.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I enjoyed the film because I felt I got to know him that way. I mean, I would love to have met him in person and talk about it with him one boy. If it ever happens, great. If it doesn't, my life will go on just fine. But I do find that it's interesting. I do get why you picked him as a subject, because he is interesting.
And I think one of the reasons he's interesting is because of the multi-layers he has a lot of layers of complexity. He's not a simple person.
I guess I do have one more question, and maybe I'm prying into his life a little bit. Did he ever meet somebody else? I never got that feeling he did.
He's had plenty of encounters, he calls them.
Perfect. I'm happy for him then.
My own personal question is, does he really want another relationship?
That's where I was going, yes. That was my next question.
I mean, he thinks he does, but that doesn't mean that he does. And that's for the viewer to figure out themselves. I mean, everybody brings themselves to a viewing experience. And, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of different ways of looking at that.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you on all of this. So your film is completed. What happens with this film? I mean, I thought it would be a difficult film to market. Or you had no problems with that?
Well, there was an element to marketing it that I had not been prepared for. So when I started marketing it to the educational world, I had to come up with a lot of things that had not been on my mind when I was shooting the film, and kind of impose them on the film. Interestingly, it was purchased by a good number of academic institutions, some of the, you know, Ivy League ones, Stanford, Northwestern, what's the other one? Yale. But it didn't have the potential I was looking for it in that market didn't really realize itself. And so now it's on YouTube, and I'm working at monetizing it by this method of offering it for free until you get a certain number of subscriptions, and then you're on the path to getting paid advertising. And so... so far, it's moving in the right direction.
Well, that's good.
In that regard, and the person who's helping me with that says that of all the viewers that are watching the film now on YouTube, the majority of them have come across the film on YouTube, and that that there's a lot of potential there for people's interest in LGBT kinds of material.
I do have a question before we go to fun questions. You've been making films for a long time. Do you feel you're ever going to stop?
Well, let me tell you a little secret. The first time I finished this film, it was 83 minutes long. And then I discovered it wasn't getting into any film festivals, and I went back to the drawing board and made it a 59-minute film. So there was a lot of work involved in doing that. It was no easy task. I have some regrets because the longer version, I think, was even more interesting, but there seemed to be a need for the film to be shorter. So this is a long way of saying that actually the accordion film that you interviewed me about is the last long version documentary that I intend to make.
Okay, that's fair. I figured that was a fair question for you. So you're right, you know your favorite part of the show is fun questions.
Right.
I know you hate them, so I'm going to give them to you anyway.
Did you think of some new ones?
I make up new ones for everybody now.
Okay.
Favorite meal of the day?
Meal?
Yeah.
Favorite meal of the day. I love breakfast.
Why?
Why do I love breakfast? It just gets my day going. I think it's an important meal. I can eat breakfast and then not need to eat again until dinner. And that doesn't, not because I'm eating a big breakfast, it's just I eat a satisfying breakfast.
Fair enough. Your favorite season?
Well, in California, the seasons are very subtle, but I do love fall. And I'm thinking of East Coast fall.
Okay, I was thinking, do you have West Coast fall?
Well, we do. It's very subtle. But, you know, I like the colors on the trees.
Don't worry, I have a film question for you for the last one.
Okay.
A film you wished you had made.
You know, Simon, there is no film that I wished I had made. What there is a film that I wished I had shown to you. There are other films. There are other films that you know nothing about.
So you're going to send it to me. It's all good.
Yeah.
So we want to encourage everybody to see Not a Still Life on YouTube, because Roberta needs to get paid.
It's Not a Still Life LGBT documentary is the way to search for it to get the free version.
And Steve is out there, and Steve wants you to see it because it'll make him happy.
You're right about that.
Well, I want to thank you again for coming on here and discussing your film. I probed you a little bit harder this time, so I apologize for that, but you knew it was coming.
It's perfectly good. All is well.
And you have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay. Bye, Simon.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.